Up is your poker magazine dedicated to the everyday player and their poker rooms. Pick up a free copy at your favorite poker room nationwide each month. But Ante Up is much more than a magazine.
Visit anteupmagazine.com daily for breaking news. And each week, download our award-winning PokerCast. Join us on our action-packed poker cruises to exotic destinations. And find special deals on Ante Up gear and great poker products at anteupstore.com.
Ante Up, it's your poker magazine.
From the WDAE Sports Animal Studios in Tampa, Florida, it's the Ante Up PokerCast. And now here are two guys who think they know how to play poker, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
It's June 10th, 2011, and you're listening to the best PokerCast on the internet. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long. Chris, I got to tell you, I'm 39 years old.
Going on 60.
Which means I have the tech savvy of no more than 3 13-year-olds in my body. All right, so I mastered this Facebook thing, and then I half-assed Twitter and LinkedIn would be an overstatement.
Right.
I kind of like eighth-assed it. So this weekend, I am like, you know what? I got to get connected on these people. People are saying, hey, Scott, why aren't you on the Twitter? And at that point, I'm like, oh, might as well link in my LinkedIn. And I literally spent like all day Sunday following everybody that's followed us on the at anteupmagazine.com on Twitter, adding a bunch of other things. I downloaded TweakDeck and then uploaded all my contacts to LinkedIn. So I am totally connected now. And I got to say, I can't handle anymore. All right, so if you've got some great invention for another social network thing that I have to be on because the other three or the other dozen smaller ones aren't good enough, you're just gonna have to wait till I'm 52.
Yeah, that's what Ante Up Publishing needs. Scott distracted with two more social things. Thank you very much. Please invent more so we can go penniless.
Well, you know, that was kind of the thing. That was always my excuse going into this. You know, hey, Facebook, it's easy. It makes sense to me. There's some real quick interaction with people. You could do a lot of things. I don't really need the rest. And then of course, I could send our Ante Up Magazine Facebook pages to the Twitter accounts. I'm like, hey, problem solved, right?
Mm-hmm.
But no, I mean, as soon as I started following people, now all of a sudden I'm getting bing, bong, bing, all kinds of things coming in with direct messages and retweets. And I'm starting to see the power of it. I'm starting to see why we need to do it. But yeah, you're right. We're only two people here.
You know, the best part is everyone on Twitter thinks it's just you, even though I also do it. And so now whatever I put on, they're going to think it's you. So I have a lot more power than you think. You know, I'm going to start.
Well, what's even funny is I didn't even know. I was like, hey, wow, I don't remember tweeting that. I'm like, oh, that's right. Chris has the login.
Yeah, when I went to the November 9, I was like frantically like, Scott, tell me what the login is so I can give you updates while I'm out here. And ever since then, I've had it on my iPad and stuff. So I haven't, every once in a while, I'll put something on there. And now that I know that everyone thinks it's you, I'm just going to put on some really offensive stuff.
Well, my point in bringing it up is just to let everybody know that at anteupmagazine.com is, or at anteupmagazine, sorry, is no longer dormant on the Twitter. We are, we're up and moving. I'm trying to be a little bit more social with it. So I got the training wheels on, so give me a little push here. But, you know, for those of you that thought I was just ignoring you, or Chris was ignoring you, or we were ignoring you, that's right, we were. But not anymore.
Oh,
and all help on using Twitter would be appreciated. And whatever we can do with it for the Ante Up Nation, I'm kind of intrigued by maybe some tweet ups or some other kind of live tweeting. I don't know how to do any of this stuff yet. I got a book here. I've read it once. I'm going to read it again. But folks can send us your suggestions on how we can better use Twitter, and better yet, tweet it to me, right? So I have to force to use it.
Yeah, force you to get involved. You know, one of the things that I can't get past with Twitter is not reading the at sign. I'm always constantly reading it when I read the. So it's always like at anteupmagazine.com. Instead of just reading anteupmagazine, I can't get it out of my head, and it just makes me stumble no matter what I do. And that just goes to show you how old I am, because I'm sure the teenagers out there are just like whizzing right through it and not even bothering them. But for me, it's like, no matter what I do, I'm always thinking they're at this thing, and I'm like, what the hell? Or about it, you know? I don't, you know, because it means about too, I guess. I don't know. I can't get past it, so it's tough. It's tough for me.
And then, of course, the LinkedIn, I have no idea. I thought LinkedIn was just a way for me to find the email addresses of people I've lost. But no, there are people posting status updates and things like that. So let me get the Twitter down, and then I'll move on to LinkedIn. But for right now, I've kind of uploaded and trying to get more involved in that as well, too.
Yeah, LinkedIn is the more mature, professional version of Facebook.
Well, I thought that, too, and then I logged in today, and all of a sudden I got somebody, hey, I'm going to see Mamma Mia this weekend, yay! I'm like, that doesn't seem like something I would post on LinkedIn, but, you know, I guess I have to learn.
By the way, here's my resume. Oh, man.
All right, but definitely check us out at Anti-Up Magazine, and we will have some fun on Twitter.
You know, speaking of professions, we have something here that's pretty interesting. You know, there are a lot of stories about after Black Friday had broke that are quoting a lot of online players who said they had skipped college or even dropped out of high school to focus on player, and they're saying stuff like, you know, all the skills I have are to play online poker, you know, and now that there's no online poker, I'm going to have to get a job at like McDonald's, you know, and like, you know, no disrespect for them. You know what I mean? They work hard at McDonald's, but that's not true, right? They got other stuff they can do.
Yeah, you know, this is an interesting question because I saw some of those stories, and I'm like, one, wow, it's so sad that you didn't go to college, you dropped out of high school, and you don't think you have any discernible skills now. I mean, obviously, I think personally, it's a big loss that you don't get an education, even if you don't use it for your career. I think there's a reason to go to college and certainly a reason to finish high school.
Yeah.
But it's tough to tell someone that when they're making millions of dollars a week, you know, clicking a mouse, that you need to go learn how to conjugate verbs and diagram algebra problems. But certainly there are things that translate. And I guess what kind of hit me over the head was we actually had a great ad in our latest issue at Andy Up from an outfit called EquityProTrader.com.
Yep.
And they're kind of trying to capitalize on this and say, you know, hey, a lot of those skills that you use actually translate very well to the stock trading biz, you know, the online stock trading biz.
That's right.
You got to have a lot of the same skills work. And so, you know, check them out at EquityProTrader.com and see where that's really true. But, you know, I wonder if there are other possible jobs out there for our mouse-clicking wonder kids.
Well, one of the things they could do is be a gamer, you know, like Bertrand Grospellier. You know, that's how he used to make all his money playing World of Warcraft and all that stuff. These guys obviously are video gamers as well. I mean, that's what they do. So if they're, you know, really good at that kind of thing, you could even look into that as a career, playing games for a living. That's what you did already. Do it again. That's one thing I was thinking of.
Well, I've never been an air traffic controller, and I certainly don't want to put our nation's flyers at risk, particularly because it's going to be us several times over the next month here. But I'm trying to think, you know, when people online play and they're playing like 18 screens at once, and they're clicking around, and they're totally focused on it. That to me is amazingly impressive.
Yeah, pushing 10, they call it.
Yeah, well, I'm talking about the online poker part, but I mean the air traffic controller also extremely stressful job where you've got a bunch of things moving around and you have to be able to react quickly and not hit the things at the same time, right?
Right, right.
You can't just focus on one plane and get it home safely because you got 30 other planes that are flying around. I would think there might be some crossover there. I mean, I'm pretty sure you can't walk in your local airport with your backpack around your back and your sunglasses and your hat screwed on backward and say, yo, hey, let me land on that plane. But I think it's the same skill set, right?
Yeah, I think maybe. So. It sounds like. Yeah, because there's a lot of stuff going on at once and you have to keep track of it all without the other ones affecting the other ones, you know, whatever. So that's a pretty good analogy. You know, the other thing, too, they could stand behind me and be a human calculator for me because I actually hate opening up my calculator on my computer. So really, if I'm just like, all right, 685 plus 497, and then guys behind there is like 1,000, whatever. So, I mean, they could do stuff like that, too, you know. They just put their computing skills to work.
Well, certainly math. I mean, math. You know, it used to be the old day you actually had to know math. Now you don't. You just have to be able to computerize math. And there's got to be a lot of things out there that
have
the same skill.
If you're that good of a player, too, I mean, maybe you offer some sort of coaching or teaching or, you know, whatever. I mean, obviously, these are the players they're talking about that are either too young to play in a brick and mortar or don't live near one. But maybe you consider moving. I mean, really, how long do you think it's going to be before this is up, too? I'm not saying that. I realize the little segment we're doing here is trying to suggest other professions. But really, right. Wouldn't you like to live in the Bahamas for a couple of years? I mean, really. I mean, go move to the Bahamas. Go move to Europe. You know, go play in Italy. Go to Toronto if you like the cold. Whatever. You know, just for a little while. Find friends and go stay with them. But, you know, coaching is always a possibility. Teaching, you know, getting on with some other teaching programs or something. There's other things they can do. But, you know, if real-world trades, yeah. I like the push and tin thing. And, you know, and you know, even so, I mean, I think the gaming thing is there, too. I mean, a lot of these guys make a lot of money playing video games, you know, and that's so they can still stay at home clicking the mouse, you know. But there's got to be other stuff that they're qualified for. And if they're young enough, you know, if they're not old enough to go play in a brick and mortar, that means they're still young enough to go back to school. Get back to school, big whiny babies.
Yeah, sell those big satellite dish watches you're wearing that cost $4,000. You'll be able to that'll cover a semester of books.
Get rid of the bling, go back to school.
Well, yeah, but, you know, also, I mean, I guess what I'd suggest is folks, there's career counselors out there.
Oh, yeah.
Go somewhere and ask them, you know, hey, this is all I did. I know it doesn't sound like it's a legitimate profession, but, hey, I made bank on it, and I got skills. I just don't know what they are, so you tell me.
Yeah,
this is what I could do.
They got those tests, you know, episode of Friends, you know, when Chandler didn't want to be a data processor anymore, so he takes 8 hours
right.
of tests. And, of course, the test comes back and says, you are ideally suited for data processing for a large multinational corporation. So maybe you are ideally suited for being an online poker player, but I'm sure there's got to be something else in there for you, so why not do it? Hey, y'all, we got a mailbag from Bob Brooks. I like that name. It's not easy to say.
I love it. It's a simple name.
And I'm glad he wrote in because it's interesting what the general public thinks about this stuff, and we actually have very specific examples to tell him exactly what's going on and that you know, he doesn't need to worry about it. He says, I played at the Mirage last week and was surprised that they have a high-hand payout of $100 for quads. A dollar from each pot? Certainly they take in more than they pay out. Where does the extra juice go? Well, Bob,
yeah.
All you got to do is pick up the copy of Annie Up Magazine. Our latest copy will tell you on our Where to Play pages, specifically page 74, if you scan down a few lines to the Mirage entry, you'll find that they have a bad beat jackpot that pays $5,000 to the losing hand, $2,500 to the winning hand, and $5.99 to everybody else at the table. They also have Aces Cracked pays $150 all day long from 8 to 1 p.m., well, morning long, and then High Hands and Flopped Royals. Now, that's just that. I mean, the other thing, too, is we have a column from Michael, Las Vegas Michael, that's about the jackpot coming up. So that tells you exactly where the jackpot drop goes. And, you know, I mean, it's weird. It's like the question was set up for us to answer. It's kind of weird. this guy, like, is he, like, in the bowels of the Annie Up? Because our July issue, Michael answers that question about, you know, where the dollar goes, who drops it, and that kind of thing. So it's pretty interesting that he asked that question. But really, it's not just quads. They pay a lot of stuff. You just got to ask.
Yeah, and then, you know, we get this question often, too, because there's always the conspiracy theorist out there. They're like, I've actually had a guy actually sit there and go through an entire month and add up what he thought were all the promotions were and how much money they would have dropped. And he's like, see? You're stealing from me. And, you know, what I always tell him is, you know, one, I can't promise you that someone's stealing. I'm not in the count room and I'm not involved. But all this stuff, all the jackpot money has to be reported and properly regulated, just like the rake is. So you're talking about gaming licenses here. It's just, you know, it doesn't make any sense for someone to cheat anybody out of this stuff,
right,
I think.
Right.
And maybe I've got too many rosy glasses on here. But the other thing, I think you're right, exactly what you pointed out, is that you can't look at one promotion. You don't know if they have other promotions. In fact, even if you ask them what are all the promotions going on, you don't know that they're not saving up some money for a promotion 2 months from now.
Right, right.
You know, they're dropping $1 each pot, and maybe they're like, you know, hey, right now, high hands for $100 for quads, this is a great promotion, but it's not going to be good forever, so, you know, maybe next month we're going to do $500 for quads. So, you know, right now we're just going to, you know, not give out as much this month and build up a war chest and really do a good promotion next month. So, you know, you just never know what's going on. But I always encourage people to, you know, to ask the managers. I mean, again, this is the player's money.
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
And every manager I've talked to, I can't speak to everyone because I haven't talked to all of them, but everyone I've talked to are upfront and honest with it. Like, they say the same thing. Like, hey, this is the player's money. We want to get it back to them. We're just trying to find the most creative way that they're going to respond to getting it back.
Right.
And so I think I would think that they would be open to tell you, hey, you know, it doesn't look like you're paying back as much. Well, here's what we're thinking about doing. Or, hey, wait, come back and ask me next month, and you'll see what we're doing next month and why there's not so much going on this month. I really do think, I mean, this is one of those reminders to get to know your managers and talk to them.
You know, we haven't talked to every manager, but it's not for a lack of trying. You know, I mean, we literally do try to reach out to pretty much every manager that at least was in our coverage area, and if they don't get back to us, it's tough. But one of the things that Michael stressed in his column that's coming up in July is that, you know, the Nevada Gaming, whatever it's called, Commission Board, whatever, they are very, very strict with their money, and there's just no way that they're stealing the money. I mean, it's just not happening. You know, the other thing, too, is a lot of these guys are going to even more, like I think you said in your column this month, that they're going to like a $2 drop, you know, because they're trying to get people to go to their room because they want to offer better promotions and they're trying to keep up with the Joneses. And it's, now people are going to think, oh my God, $2. Now, you know, one's for them and one's for the, no, that money goes back to you, you know? And, the other thing too is, I wanted to say was time of the year. You have to wonder, you know, if you're out in Vegas during the World Series, well, they may suspend their promotions because they know they're going to be busy enough, you know, and they may not drop the dollar then, or they may drop the dollar but not do as much because they're going to go broke if they, with the amount of traffic going through there and all the high hands that could possibly get hit, you know, they may end up costing them money. So they may be slowing them down or tapering them back or whatever until the high season's over or whatever. So you got to take into all considerations, but there's no way they're keeping your money. There's just no way.
All right, Bob, we appreciate the email and the great discussion that resulted from it, and we will be happy to reward you with a deck of J-Design playing cards, official playing cards of Anti-Up, now available in the Anti-Up store at antiupstore.com, and those come straight from our jackpot rake here at the Anti-Up podcast. Every time you guys download the show, we get a buck from you. You don't even know it.
Comes right out of your credit card. You didn't even know it.
Yeah, yeah, but we're giving it back to you. It's your money.
All right, our hotline is 813-448-1120. If you call, and by the way, tell us that you called and who you are, we might give you something. But let's see what happens here.
What?
Look at it. Did you push the red button? Who is it?
I pushed the green button.
Okay. Did it answer you?
No, nobody answered me. Guess nobody's there.
No, don't hang up. We're here. We're here.
I can hear you. I can hear you. Oh, man. You know, every once in a while we get a call like this. It's hilarious. Every once in a while, some kid will call or, you know, some dad will make his kid call or something, and inevitably this always ends up happening. It's pretty hilarious.
Well, my favorite are the ones in foreign languages, and I still want to put those on the show, but I don't know. Maybe they're telling me that they're going to come kill my wife or something, so we don't put those on. But, yeah, it's really funny that because when you call, this is what happens, and I understand it's a little confusing. When you call the hotline, it's like a internet answering machine, right?
Yeah.
And it comes up with my name rather than Anti-Up, so it'll be like, leave a message for Scott Long. And I love some of them that hey, I'm trying to call for the Pasco law firm. Is this the right no. Did anything on that say that?
And we always have Thietza calling in. She's always like, I'm trying to leave a message for the hotline, but I'm not sure if I am. So hopefully this recording will work.
I made it confusing. I should go back and change the message to say, leave a message for Auntie Up. Maybe I'll do that if I get caught up on everything else. So look for that.
If you ever get through this LinkedIn tweeter thing.
Right, yeah, absolutely.
Oh, my God.
Oh, man. But, hey, don't worry about it, kid. If you can figure out the green button again, we're going to be happy to give you a download of the Poker Hand Breakdown Pro, a hand history analysis program for single or mixed games from element26.net for ages 3 and up.
See, now, it's people like you who are keeping online regulation at bay. Because if you...
Hey, the kid called. He's deserving of a prize. I don't have any,
Pinker toys.
Yeah, I don't have any... diapers here, or
Barney videos,
stub green beans to give them. Yeah, so the best I can do is give them the stuff we have here. So
you can tell Kit Scott has no kids. He couldn't even come up with examples of stuff to give a kid. It's all right, buddy. You can't be green at everything.
Oh, we got a tremendous feedback this week, Chris. We're a bit on a roll here with the feedback. We've got a lot of good ones.
Yeah,
and. Love when this one came in, because he's calling my bluff. I love when people call my bluffs.
Yes.
Except when I'm actually playing, so don't call my bluffs. but this one, he wrote it, he's like, hey, I just wanted to say how much I appreciate your show. Yay! Because I'm on my way to Atlantic City from Florida as I write this email. I will be at the meetup on the 10th in Atlantic City and on the 1st in Vegas.
Oh, my goodness.
You won't be the only ones at both events.
Oh, my God.
I would love to go on the cruise as well, but duty calls as I'm getting deployed to Iraq at the end of August. Thanks again, and keep up the good work. Respectfully, Second Lieutenant Frank Allen DeGeorge, Jr.
Man, when I read that, I was like, oh weepy. I couldn't believe it. It's just awesome.
I was, because I'm like, hey, I'll give somebody something if they come to both, knowing that no one would do it. Now I'm weeping because now I gotta go out and get some diapers first, and then I gotta find something for Second Lieutenant Frank Allen DeGeorge Jr. here.
You gotta give him something that he can use in Iraq too. I mean, you can't just give him something that he's gonna have to sit on the shelf at his house and collect dust for a while until he gets back. You know.
Yeah, that's true. Well, I will try to find something very nice for you, Frank. But I gotta say this, Chris. I'm a little upset. I'm tired of these excuses that people give us for not coming on the cruise. You know, oh, I can't afford it. Oh, the kids are in school. Oh, I got to go to Iraq. Come on.
I got to defend your freedom.
Just be honest with us. You don't have to make up this stuff. Oh, but seriously, we appreciate your service, as we do with everyone. You know what? I just sent out a couple care packages this week to some troops in Afghanistan who read the magazine and hopefully listen to the show.
Yeah.
And hopefully I'll put together something nice for Second Lieutenant Frank here. But he's got to do it, though. I'm not taking the stuff to Atlantic City.
That's right. You got to wait.
I'm not going to be played like that, so...
When we see him,
we're out to Vegas and find out 40 people did the same thing, and then I'm going to be really screwed.
You see him at the Palms, then you get his address, and then we'll mail him something. Well, you brought up the meetups, and obviously they're set. This next one is like literally a couple of days away. Atlantic City, 8 o'clock at night, Friday, June 10th. Harrah's Atlantic City. We're going to have a little $70 tournament, and then hopefully some cash games, and get some stud going on or something in there mixed into it. And then, of course, we have the Las Vegas 8 o'clock Friday, July 1st at the Palms Casino. Same thing, $70 mini tournament followed by cash games. And Las Vegas Michael will be there. And he says, if I'm there, I guarantee mixed cash games are going to be played. So
awesome.
That's really cool.
And I got to say, the roster for this Friday's Atlantic City getting very impressive. El Snarfo Grande, who's been hidden since he's had a couple kids. He could probably tell me what to get him. He's going to make the drive up. And he said he told me to sleep in on Friday, Chris.
Okay.
Because it's going to be pretty intense all night, and he's not talking about the poker.
I don't even know what that means.
So I said, all right, just be sure I get on that plane Saturday. But I'll go toe-to-toe with you. And then we got another listener that's driving. He's got actually a beach house down there. He's gonna get there at midnight. He's admitted that, hey, you know, I'm going to miss the tournament. But you said there's going to be games going on, so you guys better still be there. So I promised him I would. I know, you might go to bed earlier.
Well, it's not that I go to bed early. I'll probably be broke by then. And I'm not just going to stand there and watch Wolf play and talk to him, you know? I'll be the freaking greeter at the front door, help the brush out, you know. So it's not that I'd be tired, because I stay up late. I stay up way later than you every night. But I, you know, if I have no money, if I'm penniless, I'm not going to sit there and just watch you guys play poker. So.
All right, so that's the memo to everybody coming to the meetup. Let Chris win so he stays there all night.
Yeah, dump some chips to me, and then I'll stick around.
And then also don't forget our cruise coming up August 29th, September 2nd. If you're not being deployed to Iraq, I'm going to accept that excuse.
Yes.
But all these other excuses are bogus. Give me a call and get on the boat. It's only $369 a person, and you got until early next week for that price to be guaranteed. After that, can't promise you I got a cabin, can't promise you what the price is going to be. But
right.
Go to andy@magazine.com/cruise, and we'll get you taken care of.
June 13th, don't forget it. Save the date, because that's when you got to buy it by, otherwise you know what's going to happen. You know, also, too, finally, we're looking up for some ambassadors. You know, we're expanding to Arizona for our next issue, also Colorado and Iowa. We have Colorado and Iowa ambassadors lined up, but you know, we got some people working on it for us for Arizona. So if you are interested, let us know, because you know, we have someone maybe in the wing. So if you want to do it, make sure you you apply soon at antiupmagazine.com/ambassadors. That's plural, and we'd love to have you on board and have you have a voice in the community. You know, that's one of the things that I think makes everybody excited when they actually get the position or whatever, is they know that they'll be able to tell everyone what's going on in their area and sort of have, you know, it's a pride thing, too. You get to go into your poker room and people recognize you, know who you are by your face in the magazine and things like that. So that's the feedback we get from a lot of our ambassadors, that they just love being recognized and you know, and promoting the poker in their area.
Absolutely. It's a great program. We love the folks that we have in it right now.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, let's see what news is piling up on our desk this week.
The Merge Gaming Network, home to dozens of online poker sites, including the largest left serving the U.S. market, has temporarily halted signups of U.S. players, apparently in response to overwhelmingly demand. I need to rewrite that. In response to overwhelming demand. Boy, who's the editor here? The network says it hopes the pause lasts just 4 to 6 weeks and doesn't affect players already signed up. However, the network will remain closed for residents of states where action has been taken against other online poker sites. So if you're in New York or Maryland, sorry, not going to get down there.
The state of Rhode Island is looking for a consultant to study the feasibility of adding table games to the state's two slots parlors, with the possibility of a voter referendum coming in November 2012. That's the end of the world, right? November 2012 is when the world ends?
It depends on the... there's a couple ends of the worlds coming up before that.
So. Oh, okay.
It's kind of like the backup to the end of the world. But wow, that's planning ahead there. That's like 16 months?
Yeah.
With my quick math, I don't have my calculator up, so I need a little while behind me to figure it out. But yeah, we'll see what happens there. All right, well, and finally, the World Series of Poker has added a $1 million buy-in tournament on July 1st. With 11% of the buy-ins going to support an organization that fights poverty worldwide. More than 15 players have already committed, including top professionals, casino executives, and banker Andy Beal.
Wow.
And two spots are reserved for the winner of a mega satellite, as well as the winner of a to-be-announced promotion.
See, the Andy Beal thing is so cool. I mean, this stuff is, $1 million people, rich get richer, and then they get to help out a charity event, and that's cool, and it's, you know, whatever. But the Andy Beal thing is great, to see him come out and in public, playing in a public thing. You know what I mean? Like the other games that he had were all semi-private, or if not completely private. You know? Whereas now the whole world's going to get to see this guy and see how he plays and you know, see what he looks like and whatever. I mean, I know there's that one photo of him circling around, looks like his high school photo, but but really, I mean, this is pretty cool to me. And of course, the $1 million buy-in is supposed to be shocking, but it's really not. I mean, these guys are doing $250,000 ones.
I love the comment from Tom Dwan. He's like, $1 million? Sure, why not? Yeah. Like, oh my gosh. Yeah, sure, why not?
Why not?
But can you imagine? I want to see what the buy-ins for the Mega Satellite are. Because can you imagine? I mean, how many people get excited about trying to win a $10,000 seat to the main event?
Yes.
I mean, that's got to be the lowest level for a Mega Satellite is $10,000 to get in.
Yeah.
For this thing, right?
Yeah.
For a chance to win $1 million? I mean, a $1 million buy-in?
Yeah, $1 million buy-in.
I would love to be the guy that wins the to-be-announced promotion where I don't do anything. You know, I just have to scratch off the right card or something. But you know, the other thing that's really got me a little, my toast is a little burned here, Chris.
Okay.
You know, it bothers me that the World Series is so threatened by the Antietam meetup at the Palms across the street on July 1st that they had to scramble and try to come up with something that competes with our event. And they knew they just couldn't do it unless they had to get really big. And so, yeah, sure, they tried out this $1 million buy-in. So I wonder, I know we've already announced the $70 buy-in, Chris.
All right.
Should we increase our buy-in to $70 million?
You know, I think Andy Beal would still show up.
He probably would.
He probably would play in that. He'd be the only one, though.
He'd be the only one. We keep the rake, and then everybody's happy.
Keep the rake. Oh, by the way, there's no rake in our meetups. We don't get the rake in the meetups. I want to make sure that's perfectly clear. You know, we're paying the rake and never seeing that money. So it goes to the house. We aren't getting any of the money. Now, that's one of the things, too, that's always hurt us in the past with some of the, you know, people would think when we're doing our Ante Up events that we're getting the money for them. And we're like, no. No, we're not getting the money. So let's not get off track here, but let's make sure it's clear. We don't get any money from these meetups.
But hey, $1 million buy-in tournament, that's you know, that's crazy. What's next? I mean, you can't go to $5 million. That's going to be $5 million. The next one's going to have to be at $10 million at some point.
Well, it just ticks me off because Andy Beal is going to come to our meetup, and now he's going to choose this one instead. You know, I mean, he's blowing
us off. Well, it depends. He might be out, you know.
That's true. That's true.
It's a 3-day tournament, so it's a slow structure, so probably not. But, you know, hey, it takes – you know, in crappy Nolan Hold'em, it takes just one beat. That's why I don't play it.
I wonder if Andy Beal's going to have that little mechanism hooked up to his foot for this, too. You remember that?
All right, yeah. Why not?
A little thing that
worked
taps
for him
him
before.
Yeah, yeah. That was limit, but, you know, you never know. Want to learn how to really make money at the World Series? Join Pro Poker Seminars with special guest Dr. Alan Schoonmaker in Vegas, June 27th through 29th. Small group intensive seminars on live sit-and-goes, cash games, and multi-table tournaments. Visit ProPokerSeminars.com and use bonus code ERIC50, that's E-R-I-C-5-0, to get $50 off the cash game or multi-table seminars.
All right, it was just a random thought from the speak first, think later mouth of my lovable co-host, Chris Cosenza. But it's turned into a $1 million great idea before somebody else came up with a $1 million great idea. If we could replace the dead presidents on U.S. currency with poker players, who would be honored on those greenbacks? We got a lot of great responses from our listeners, and of course, we have our own ideas, which we have not shared with each other. I can't wait for that part of the show.
Yeah.
But let's get right to it, because we have some very creative listeners out there. We always knew that, but wow, these have been some really good submissions we got.
Yeah, it's pretty funny. It was like every other day we were getting an email from someone, and it was made for great reading, too, while we were doing it, so I can't wait to do it.
Yeah, you know, and I got the first one, and I'm like, oh, eat that. And then the second one came in, oh, my God, that's good, too. And then the third one, oh, wow. So they've all been pretty good. So, you know, you want me to jump right in here?
Okay.
All right, first one we got was from our good friend Chicago Brian. I think he actually posted before the show was over.
I know.
With it was like right there. I'm like, wow, Chris even got the show up already? There's already a discussion going on? All right, so he says on the dollar it has to be Doyle Brunson, Chris, because he is really the George Washington of poker in every respect.
Yeah, you know, I think this is going to be a common theme throughout because it just makes so much sense. I mean, you know, and not that you have to compare, and we didn't make it a prerequisite that you compare these people, but yeah, you know, to like who we already have on the bill, but just makes sense.
Natural.
Yeah. You know, I mean, he's the most common popular figure in poker, and so is the dollar bill. It's the most common bill, so he belongs on. So I think you're going to see that a lot, but yeah, that makes sense.
I had no idea he Doyle Brunson had wooden teeth. You know, things you learn. All right, on the $5, he says that may have to go to Chris Jesus Ferguson. He's not very committed there, Chris.
Yeah, it didn't
may
sound
like
it.
May have to go to Chris Jesus Ferguson. For the facial hair and the stature, he has to be at least 6'4", much like, quote, that guy who freed the slaves.
Yeah, he's going for the look thing. So he's all over the place. We'll have to see if he sticks with his theme or not. But, yeah, it makes sense. Jesus looks a little bit like, you know, him, and then, you know, he's tall like him. So, yeah, that's pretty cool. That's a lot of thought there. It's good.
think it's going to be tough to go with the look thing here. There's not a lot of poker players out there with powdered wigs, but we'll see. On the $10, he says, let's put Chip Reese here because he's a classy, prominent figure, and the $10 bill suits him well.
Yeah, I'm not sure I know what that means. I mean, I know what classy, prominent figure means. I mean, I don't know why the $10 suits him well. I don't get that, but...
Yeah, can't answer that either. All right, on the $20, he says, as common as the $20 bill is, we have to put Daniel there because every time you go to an ATM, you get $20 bills, and every time you turn poker on TV, you get Daniel's face. Note my decision to use only his first name is based 50% on the fact that, much like Cher and Madonna, he is big enough to go by just one name, and 50% due to the fact that I'm unlikely to spell his last name correctly. All right, but then quickly he came back later, Chris, and he said, oops, I have to make an update. I don't think we could put Daniel on the 20. This is U.S. currency, and we don't want any Canadian faces on our money. Same goes for any other non-U.S. player, so I'm going to have to remove Daniel from our currency, put him on some Canadian money. Replacing him, we'll have to go to his Poker Stars teammate, Barry Greenstein.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, his reasoning for putting Daniel on the bill was because he was always on TV and you always get 20s from the ATM, but Barry's not always on TV, so I'm not sure. I think he's just grasping at straws here. Come on, Chicago Brian, rally here.
I think he realized his mistake and then had to panic there and pick the first thing he could think of. All right, on the 50, an unlucky piece of currency at the poker table. I have to go with the self-declared unlucky whiner at the poker table, Phil Hellmuth.
That's a good one. That makes sense. That's pretty funny.
Yeah, we get a lot of the unlucky comments here. So yeah. I think the 50 is actually fairly consistent throughout these between two people. All right, on the 100, anyone who doesn't put Phil Ivey on the C-note is dumb. Enough said.
Well, I guess I'm stupid. I guess I'm stupid.
Hey, no foretelling here. Don't keep surprised.
All right.
And then he said, bonus currency, a dollar coin has to feature a woman. This is the toughest one. Jen Harmon would be the favorite here to show her face, but since the $1 coin is doomed to failure, I would love to see Annie Duke's mug on there and see the crash and burn of the new coin.
Oh, man, that's hilarious. Very good. Nice job.
All right.
So,
Terry Green.
Yeah, the next one was from Terry Green on the dollar. He also puts Doyle Brunson, says the greatest poker legend living today, is known and respected by the young and older poker players, deserves to be on the dollar.
In the words of Chicago Brian, enough said.
Enough said. $2 bill introduced for the first time here. Phil Ivey deserves to be on a $2 bill. Besides being the Tiger Woods of poker, his appearance in front of the camera are as rare as the bill itself.
I like that reasoning. Very rare. Don't see a lot of $2 bills anymore.
Yeah. The $5 bill goes to Amarillo Slim. He says he played lots of poker with his friend Doyle Brunson, winner of 4 World Series poker bracelets, also known for his prop bets, which is why he's referred to as the greatest gambler that ever lived. Among his famous victims are country music legend Willie Nelson. He beat him at $300,000 playing dominoes. And adult magazine publisher Larry Flint, $2 million in one poker game. So Amarillo Slim on the sawbuck.
Well, yeah, and it's just to kind of play devil's advocate here. I mean, who hasn't beat Larry Flint out of a poker pot? And really, I mean, Willie Nelson doesn't really have great money management skills. So I'm not trying to take away from Amarillo here, but you probably need some better examples there.
Okay, the $10 bill goes to Phil Helmuth Jr. Even though he's a poker brat, the man still has 11 WSOP bracelets. I almost gave the spot to Johnny Chan, but due to the fact that he would have become the first poker player to win 3 World Series poker bracelets in a row, but lost to Phil Hellmuth, and he had his record 10 World Series poker bracelets beaten by Phil Hellmuth again, the poker brat gets this spot hands down. That's a lot of reasons.
All right, $10 makes sense. Okay.
Johnny Moss is on the $20 bill, according to Terry Green. Says he was the first winner of the World Series, so he deserves some sort of bill, and the $20 one seems to be the right one for him.
All right.
The $50 bill, Chip Reese, one of the best all-around poker players I've ever lived. Even the greats on this list say so. So Chip Reese gets the $50. And finally, the $100 bill goes to Stu Unger.
Wow.
Unger is a 3-time world champion. He had 5 bracelets. He won 10 major Nolan Hold'em championships and a 50% success rate, which means he won every other event he played in. Further understand his greatness, think about this. For years, the second largest poker tournament in the world was Amarillo Slim's Super Bowl of Poker. At that time, every great poker player attended the tournament. Like the World Series, the main event at the Super Bowl of Poker was $10,000 buy-in, no limit hold'em. And only one man in history captured titles at both the World Series and Super Bowl of Poker, and that man was Stu Unger. And he won them three times each. Not bad for a high school dropout.
Wow. I wish you would give us a few more reasons on that.
So basically, Stu on the $100 bill.
No, good ones. He introduced some new bills and some new people, so we appreciate that, Terry.
Yep.
And then Glance 302 chimed in with, hey, it was short and sweet this week. We kind of like that.
Yeah.
And didn't want to get too wordy like I'm going to get with mine. But on the dollar bill, Doyle Brunson, no-brainer.
Right.
All right, so yep. We're 3 for 3 on that, right?
Yep.
No disagreement. $2 bill, Wild Bill Hickok.
Nice.
For the historic value he brings to the table.
Nice.
Very creative. The $5 Johnny Chan, no reason.
He doesn't need a reason. He's $5 bill.
Yeah.
He's Johnny Chan.
$10, hey, Phil Hellmuth is the second vote for the $10
bill.
Wow,
that's wild.
I'm sorry, here we go. I'm sorry, he says Johnny and Phil are close to interchangeable here on the 5 and 10. I'm sorry.
All right.
I got too smart with my notes. So it was Johnny Chan on the 5, Phil Hamilton on the 10. They're close to being interchangeable here, but Johnny gets the edge because of the diversity of his arm wear.
I'm not even sure what the hell that means.
Well, what's the edge of being on the $5 bill versus the $10 bill?
I know. Why is that better?
I'm not saying it's not, but it seems arbitrary, right?
Wouldn't you want to be worth
woo-hoo,
more?
I got the 5. You got the 10.
I'm worth more at $10. Twice as good as you.
Yeah, well, that's what I'm saying. He says Johnny Chan, it's worth more. He gets the edge. So.
Yeah. I get it.
All right, the 20. Stu Unger, simply one of the greatest.
Yep, as we know. You want to refer back to those notes? Because I'll read them again if you want to why
he's. Yeah, I know. He just lost the value there. He's
okay.
On the 50, David Sklansky makes our list finally.
Yeah, David Sklansky.
And interestingly enough, he says the only non-Hall of Famer on his list, but it's in part to his bibliography.
Yes, of course.
Lots of books written.
Yeah.
And then on the 100, Johnny Moss. Like Ben Franklin, he's one of the founding fathers of the modern game.
Very good. Okay, this one comes from Jason22. He says, obviously Doyle's face goes on both the $10 bill and the $2 bill.
All right.
Gotta like that.
Very good.
And anytime something costs $11 or less, you have to pay with those two bills too. But
yes, right, so. There we go. I like it.
The $1 bill goes to Daniel Negreanu. He says he's the most prolific TV personality on the most prolific bill. Very interesting.
Can't argue with it. Most prolific bill. So.
Yeah, that's true. $5 goes to Chris Ferguson. He says he likes the alliteration, the Ferguson Fiver.
We got a couple of people working on alliteration on these lists today. Yeah.
Okay.
That was a good one.
Now Barry Greenstein gets to be on the $20 bill again. That's the second time. You know, Chicago Brian had him on there. No reason, just makes a good fit. Okay.
Yeah, see, I'm sorry. You got to have a reason.
Yeah, you got to have a reason. So, okay, we're not going to have $20
bills in his world.
This is
important stuff. You guys think we're just kidding around here. This is deeply, deeply important.
I like this next one.
If you're just going to be not having a reason, then fine.
The $50 bill. If it's unlucky, then only one man can grace the face, Mike the Mouth Matisau. And that's true.
Unluckiest person in poker.
That's right. And the $100 bill, Phil Ivey, enough said.
A lot of enough said going on.
Yeah, it's like they're all wrote the same person wrote all these lists.
Yeah, I don't want to defend my honor. You should know why. All right, Mac Daddy gets involved here. And on the dollar bill, Benny Binion, Chris. Says, without him starting the World Series of Poker, I don't think any of us are interested in the game as we are today.
That's a good point. It's not really a... Yeah, all right, I'll go for that. All right, that's cool.
All right, he won you over.
All right. Yeah.
All right, the $2 bill, Thomas Amarillo Slim Preston, one of the World Series of Poker's early champions who helped to really promote the game in the 70s, and like the $2 bill everyone forgets about.
Yes, smart.
All right, the $5 bill, Action Dan Harrington finally gets
a hey!
A World Series of champ whose books have become must-reading for any serious poker player. Plus, I had to get a Boston and Red Sox guy in here somehow. Boo.
Taking him off the list.
All right, the $10 bill. Chris Moneymaker.
Hey.
He says, there's no question that this World Series of Poker champ's victory via small stake online satellite tournament was the beginning of the poker boom. Does Ante-Up even exist if this never happens? I doubt it.
He's probably right.
Yeah. All right. All right, the $20 bill. Chip Reese, very popular for him, right?
Yeah.
One of the game's true all-around champions and whose name is on the $50,000 Players' Championship Trophy at the World Series of Poker.
Yep.
$50 bill, Phil Hellmuth again. Only because the 50 has a monetary value, but it's the bill most true poker players want nothing to do with.
So true.
And then on the $100 bill, Doyle Brunson, the godfather of poker, should only be on a bill as a currency of the true high-stakes players.
That's cool. Very cool. If he's not going to be on the one.
Yeah, I just noticed Jason doesn't have him on any bill.
Yeah, that's wild.
Seems a little odd, doesn't it?
Yeah, enough said. Okay, this comes from Andy Malowitz. $1 bill. I think Doyle has to be on this. Benny Binion is a great choice as well, but Doyle is the man who transformed poker.
All right.
We got another $2 bill entry. This is going to be an interesting choice, but I think Tom Dwan should be there. One of the original leaders of the youth movement who had people talking Hall of Fame for him, even without an online outlet, I think he will be around for a long time. Which is weird because the $2 bill really isn't around for a long time.
Yeah, that's true. Polar opposites there.
$5 bill, Action Dan Harrington comes back again. I think he's the best of the best choices for that bill. So that's interesting. And Dan Harrington on there twice. At least he didn't make reference to the crappy Red Sox. But all right, $10 bill, Chip Reese, a class act in the poker world. I think the world missed out with his passing, especially now that other games are starting to be spread. $20 bill, Chris Moneymaker. Name, persona, and profile make sense. Poker does not have the boom without the bluffing accountant from Tennessee.
Okay.
$50 bill. I think if you got to talk luck, you are forgetting the most unlucky player of them all, Jean-Robert Bolland. JRB, who calls his own bad beats. $50 bill from him. So he's not on my list, but I almost put him somewhere on my list. And I think it might even been this one. But no, it wasn't this bill. It was another one, but I didn't do it. And we'll talk about that later.
Oh, he's definitely getting creative here, bringing in Tom Dwan and John Robert. So he's bringing in some new people for us to consider. I like that.
Great blood. All right, so lastly, the $100 bill, Phil Ivey, popular choice. Great choice a few weeks ago, and even better now with his protest at the World Series and suit against Tiltware. We may never know the whole and true story, but the legend of Ivey is only enhanced by recent developments.
A new legend. I like that.
New legend.
All right, O'Malley 37 offers up his 2 cents. Ha ha ha! Get it? I that did make me laugh, O'Malley. You very witty, very witty.
Very good.
All right, dollar bill would be Benny Binion since he was the first, so to speak.
Yeah, very good. So I didn't think that many people would actually remember Benny Binion. I'm real impressed.
Yeah, we got a little battle here for the dollar bill going on between Benny and Doyle.
Yeah.
All right, the $2 bill would be Stu Unger, since the $2 has such a short circulation time, and Unger's life was tragically cut short. Makes sense to me.
Okay.
All right, the $5 bill, I'd put Johnny Chan, who bridged the gap between the legends, i.e. Brunson, Slim, and Caro, and the new kids, Negreanu, Dwan, and Ivy, just as Lincoln bridged the gap between the founding fathers and the 20th century presidents.
Man, that's some serious thought there.
Yeah, I think we're going to play some God Bless America in the background on that one. That's going to be a little patriotically weepy there. All right, the $10 bill would put Phil Hellmuth for the number of the number of bracelets being greater than 10, and he also kind of embodies Alexander Hamilton. Everyone appreciated what he did for the U.S., but no one liked him enough to make him president.
Very good. That is funny.
Oh, man. All right, the $20 bill. I would put Amarillo Slim, a southern gentleman, much like Andrew Jackson, who's an extremely important figure in American history, but most people can't name a single policy Jackson implemented, much like the lay fan of poker who has most likely heard the name Amarillo Slim but isn't quite sure why he is historically important as far as poker is concerned.
At least you put a lot of thought into these. This is great.
Yeah, we got a little closet history professor here. I love it.
This is great.
All right, the $50 bill, I would put Mike Carroll.
Hey.
He has been on the base list yet, right? Has he?
Yeah, not yet. That's it.
He's the mad genius and the only one crazy enough to buy into a game with 50s. He also embodies Ulysses S. Grant, whose tactics on the battlefield were also often deemed insane, but were just genius enough to help win the Civil War.
Man, this is awesome. I feel like I'm in 11th grade history.
Yeah, I know. There's going to have to be a Schoolhouse Rock made out of this one. All right, the $100 bill, Doyle Brunson, for alliteration purposes, it could be called the Big Brunson Buck. I also think he embodies Ben Franklin. He was an ambassador for the United States and the colonies, then tried to bring about a peaceful resolution of American independence, but also knew there was a time to fight. Just like today, when our poker freedoms are being taken away from us, give me poker liberty or give me death. He also says he knows that's not a Benjamin quote, but I think it's fitting. So Franklin is also a great inventor, and Brunson invented the aggressive style of play, or at least introduced it to most players whose super system, the Poker Player's Bible.
Plus, you know, they're both bald as a cue ball, so
So there you go. They look alike.
They even look a little bit alike, too. So.
All right, so he put a lot of thought into this, Chris. So you could tell the pain here that he had to leave some people out. So he said he really tried to fit Sklansky in, but couldn't figure out where to put him. And so he had to leave some extremely important figures out, with apologies to John Adams. And then he wants to briefly touch on coins, Chris.
Interesting.
No one's done coins yet. So the penny, he puts Ferguson, the nickel letterer, the dime Dewan, the quarter Negrano, the 50-cent piece Ivy, and the gold Sacagawea dollar, Jennifer Harmon.
Of course. Well, you know, the other thing, too, is I'm pretty sure Ben Franklin had gastric bypass just like Doyle, so...
probably.
I love that even more.
He was great in basketball in high school, too, by the
that's
way.
That's right. You know, we had some other people who sent in some stuff, but they didn't give us a complete list. But some of them was pretty funny, so we thought it was worth adding to our contribution list here. So, St. Gilmore says, doomed to failure or not, the dollar coin has to be Jen Harmon. Any Duke should be on the wooden nickel. It's all about trust.
Ouch. Lots of hatred there over Miss Duke.
He says, shout out Daniel, because stoplights are weird in Canada. I don't know what that's supposed to be. I mean, it's those green flashing lights, maybe. I don't
Daniel,
know.
The stoplights are weird Canadian. Yeah, come on. You got to read it right.
I don't know. He says, is this really a red, white, and blue thing? To me, poker is one of the few precious things that is border-free and class-free. I was going to go with borderless and classless, but I don't think the haters really need more ammunition. PhDs... play with high school dropouts, Chinese play with Yuan, to play with Denmark Sharks, and Scott check calls octogenarians. I'm not saying Daniel deserves to be in the running, just that he can't be excluded because he's a hockey fan. Okay.
Well put.
Yeah.
All right, gun to poker, and we knew we were going to get something from him, right?
Yeah.
And I got to say, this one was pure genius. They should mint a new $40 bill and put a moneymaker's face on it.
Oh, man. All right.
It actually has a poker. I mean, you could play a 20/40 game with bills then.
You're killing me. You could do it with 20s, too. But all right. So Killy19341 says, we should put Chris and Scott's silhouette, the Antioch podcast logo, on the $100 bill. Yes!
We are done. Right there. That is the best idea.
That's the best way to end it, too. I'd love to be on some currency. That'd be awesome.
Our contributions to poker far outweigh Phil Ivey, Doral Brunson's, Benny Binion's, so that makes perfect sense.
Oh, if they put my profile on, they'd have to invent a longer dollar bill, because my nose, there wouldn't be enough room to put my whole nose on there. Well, we did come up with our own list, so yeah, I don't know how you want to do this. Do you want to go alternating dollar, that kind of thing?
Yeah, I think so. I got a little intro here, though, because, much like when we did our chapters, I like to explain my thought process.
Right.
So it's a little harder for people to criticize me, at least for that, right?
They probably will criticize you for that.
Let me do my thought process. Maybe you do the same thing, but I'll go through my thought process first, and if you have anything great, if not, we'll jump right into the dollar here. So, all right, so I got to say, this was a lot harder than I thought it would be. You know, when you mentioned on the show, I'm like, hey, that would be fun. I could just bang out a couple, and no, it turned out to be really difficult for me.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of it is because I set up some fairly strict parameters for myself. So I did it to myself, just like in poker. I make poker harder than it has to be. here's the thing. I wanted to know how he chose whose face to put on the U.S. bills. I want to kind of use the same criteria, right?
Yeah.
It turns out, Chris, did you know this? The reasons have been lost. Though it's commonly thought of that the most popular president appears on the dollar bill in most countries, so that explains George Washington. I can't go on that. For the rest, I'm going to have to go on what their contributions were to U.S. history and try to match them to poker players' contributions to poker. That's kind of what I'm thinking, you know?
Yeah.
So, you know, Thomas Jefferson on the two, so blah, 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 blah. But a little Cliff Clavin, little known fact here, Chris.
Yeah.
But you did know this. While bills have been around almost as long as the United States has, it wasn't until 1928 that our presidents and cabinet secretaries were enshrined on bills.
Oh, no, I did not know that.
Mm-hmm. I didn't think you did. I didn't know it either, so I knew you did not.
Yeah, there's no way.
So I think there has to be some hefty weight given to the veterans of the poker world, so I decided on my own my list includes only members of the Poker Hall of Fame.
Very good.
You know, we go back and take people off the bills later on, you can put on your Phil Ivies and your Tom Duans. All right, I did get tripped up a little bit, Chris, though, because by law, you have to be dead to be on U.S. currency. Well, I thought I could put together a worthy list of dead Hall of Famers. It's just not as much fun. So I'm just going to conveniently forget that part, all right?
Okay.
All right, and then finally, I'm not being some Michael Bay jingoistic American here, but it is U.S. currency, right?
Right.
I fully support Daniel Negreanu being on the Canadian bill, Johnny Chan being on a Chinese or Japanese bill or both, Joe Hashem being on an Australian bill or even a sugar packet. But I agree with Chicago Brian that only Americans should be considered for this list. We could do other lists for the other countries. All right, that's my criteria.
Well, now that you've stepped on my toes, I'm going to go to the emergency room.
Because
no. They're killing me. Yeah, since all of our American money features dead men who have made significant contributions to our country, I thought very hard about keeping that theme here, and I very nearly did, though. It's very close. So,
wow.
So,
that's going to be impressive to hear.
Yeah. The bright spot is that everyone I use will be dead someday, so ultimately my goal will be achieved. And I think I say it later on, but I agree with you. I think everyone should be American-born, so you know, no offense to anyone else, but you know, it's American money. I didn't go for the whole historic thing. I just sort of kept to what I said here about trying to make them dead, but if they weren't dead, I knew they'd be dead someday. So, but all right, so I'll start with the dollar. I'll do my dollar, then you do yours. That's how you want to do it?
Yeah, well, I think the dead eventually is a little angle shooting, but I'm going to let you run with it.
All right. Well, sorry, there's no jokes here for the dollar bill. Doyle Brunson. You know, I thought about Johnny Moss or even Wild Bill Hickok or Doc Holliday. You know, somebody who's way back when and was a poker, you know, character or whatever. But it just has to be DB, and I'm just what I'm going with. So I'm going with Doyle Brunson, and that's not Deutsche Bank. That's Doyle Brunson.
All right, the dollar bill has to be the most popular, like George Washington. Problem is, Chris, popularity is fleeting these days, and I'm guessing the good old GW probably wouldn't even win the popular vote anymore for president. But I have to go with Doyle Brunson as well, who historically is probably the most popular poker player.
Yeah, absolutely. Very good.
So we agree.
Yeah, it's weird.
Although I figured if we had to agree on something, it'd be the dollar. We'll see if we agree on anything else.
Did you do a $2 bill? Because I did.
I
one,
did so. Do a $2
okay,
bill.
All right. Well, here's the thing. I did a little research on a $2 bill. You did yours on overall. Yeah, see, people think that it's odd and out of circulation, which is exactly how I would characterize Mike Caro. He's odd and lives in the Ozarks. So you might think that he should be on the $5 bill because he's the greatest five-card draw player ever, but no, I had someone else in mind for that. But yeah, I did a little research on a $2 bill, and it turns out that they're still printing, like up to like 2003, they were still printing them, and there's a lot of history behind them, and there's like billions of dollars worth of current $2 bills that are accepted as currency. So even though they think they're rare and they're out of circulation, they're not. So, you know, he's still around, he still plays once in a while, so he's still there, he's just really strange when you see him.
Excellent. And he's going to be dead someday.
And so, he will be dead someday, so.
All right, well, this is very interesting because I really wanted to put Mike Caro on this bill too, Chris.
Wow.
I said the $2 bill is the oddball bill, and but here's the thing. Mike Caro is not a Hall of Famer, and rules is rules. So just like the $2 bill, Johnny Moss has been gone for a while. He died 14 years ago, and his greatest successes were 40 years ago. But successes they were, he deserves to be on the bill that is most forgettable. But a bill, when we run across it, we always say, oh, yeah.
Okay, well, before I move on to the $5 bill, I had someone in mind for the $3 bill.
Oh, my gosh, I could go forever on a $3 bill. That was a creating currency. But what did you have in mind?
But I'm not going to say who it is.
That's probably good for the sake of our company.
Yeah, right? So let's move on to the $5 bill. But you can all imagine who the $3 bill might be. All right, so the $5 bill, I put Edward G. Robinson.
Wow, going Hollywood on.
Yes, not as himself, but rather as the man in the Cincinnati Kid. He's the king of five-card stud, the original poker game, really. And he has to have, you know, that stoic look on his face when he's with the kid and he's got the hat on and his stogie in his mouth. And it has to be that way for the portrait or no dice. He can't be on the bill. And he can even be holding up the Jack of Diamonds if you want. Like sort of that wry smile. But yeah, very Edward G. Robinson nice. On the $5 bill.
Give you creativity points for going to the Hollywood on that. Very
yeah,
nice.
Cause I'm not doing the Hall of Fame.
Tying in the five-card stud. I like it. I thought you were really stressed because you wanted to put Mike Caro there, but you found another way to do it.
Yeah, I did. Very good.
I like it. All right, my $5 bill, Wild Bill Hickok.
Nice.
He's the true pioneer of poker. The fiver seems like a good fit since it was probably like the $100 bill back in his day.
Yeah.
And he met his maker in the same way as Honest Dave. Not too crass?
Very good. No, very good. That was good. Too soon?
Can't be
too soon?
You can't be as crass as that Geico commercial with Mrs. Lincoln in it, right?
Yeah, I mean, her butt does look big in it, so what the hell?
And I got to give credit to whoever it was in our group that mentioned Wild Bill Hickok, because I didn't realize he was a Poker Hall of Famer, but he is.
Yeah.
Did you know that?
Yeah, I did. That was like one of the first classes, too, I think. It might have been the first class that he was in.
Yeah, he was in the introductory class.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah.
Very good.
Okay, the $10 bill, I thought about Johnny Chan because he was the first to 10 bracelets. But again, we talked about American-born players should really be on American money. And Chan's already on the yen, so, I mean, you know, why does he need two bills? So I'm going with David Sklansky on the bill to keep the geeks happy. Now go back to watching right. The Big Bang Theory or whatever. Okay, now, he's a math guy, right? And 10 right. is, like, a really important number in math. It's the decimal system is what it's based on, and he's a math guy. Plus, it's how many fingers I had to use when I count up my pot odds, so which explains why I suck at pot odds. So, you know, if I'm doing math, I use my fingers. I'm doing math, I think of Sklansky, and there's 10 fingers, so Sklansky gets the $10 bill in my book.
Very nice, very nice. All right, well, Chip Reese was a master of every game, and I think that ability has to be enshrined on a bill that's so versatile.
Mm.
And like I'll always remember Alexander Hamilton for his duel with Aaron Burr, how can we ever forget Chip's marathon duel with Andy Block in the 50K?
Yes.
The thing went on for years.
That's pretty funny. Man, you're really pulling out the history and all the stops here. I didn't think you'd research it that much. I thought you'd just be more funny than researchable. This is good.
Can't do both. I can't do both, though.
All right, well, there's a twist on my $20 bill. Chris Moneymaker, he gets the nod here. But this bill is special because the front and back are identical, giving the illusion that you have two $20 bills, which would be the same amount that he paid to enter the satellite that ultimately led to the World Series
very
seat
nice.
And the world title. So $20 bill for a moneymaker. You don't have to print new money for him. Just keep track of the one you have because he's on both sides.
I like it. Very creative. Wow, you are. I'm gonna this next issue of the magazine is gonna suck because you wasted all your creativity on this list. I'm gonna say the cover is gonna be like blank white.
Yeah, bare white with like a dot in the middle.
Publisher's conference is gonna be an apology. All right, the $20 bill, I said Amarillo Slim.
Oh, yeah, Slim.
All right. The 20 is the most counterfeited U.S. bill, and I think it's safe to say that Slim is one of, if not the most counterfeited players in poker. He was the first to be a true publicity hound, and these days people talk about poker players more because of the media saturation than the quality of their play.
Very good. Very good. Okay, the $50 bill is a pretty common theme, the unlucky tie to it. Poker players don't want it because it brings them misfortune. Well, Chip Reese won the first ever 50K horse event.
Ah, very nice.
And died shortly thereafter at the very young age of 56. Plus, he was born in the 50s. I would say that this is as unlucky as it gets. Chip Reese deserves to be on the 50, and we miss him dearly.
That's very good. You know, I was trying to figure out where Chip went. I had him on the 5 for a while, and then I had to push him back to the 10. But wow, that's good reasons for the 50. That would help me put Stu on the 2.
Yeah.
All right, well, I want Stu on Gerkhorst. Much like the reasons a few of our listeners shared, this is the unluckiest of Bills. While it's hard to say that Stu was unlucky since he created most of his own problems, he belongs on the list somewhere, and this is the best spot.
Very good. Very good. I will continue the Stu Unger theme, but with the $100 bill. He is a true gambler. He lived life on the edge, and the $100 bill is synonymous with gambling. I almost put him on the 50 like you did, but when you think about how much money he won, lost, and blew on drugs, you have to think of excess, and there's no higher denomination than the $100 bill. So he really, to me, was... Money was just like water to him, and he didn't care either way. So the $100 bill goes to Stu Unger for me.
Wow. All right, well, this was the most difficult one for me, because I think the $100 – after the dollar bill, the $100 bill. Those are the two high-profile bills, right, I think?
Yeah, yeah.
You could kind of intermix everybody else somewhere else, but got to be special on these two. I eventually settled on Benny Binion for the $100 bill.
Very good.
I really, really wanted to honor Jack Binion, who I think is responsible for the World Series growth, even though Benny created it, and as Ben Franklin was, a real true ambassador of poker. But I think the $100 bill should be reserved for a statesman. So I guess what am I thinking here? I'm thinking of this as a collective honor for the Binion family. Well, you know, except for Becky.
Exactly.
And its immense contributions to poker. And really, who better to put on the biggest bill than the guy who always let you bet as much as you wanted to in his casino?
Very good. Exactly what I was thinking was that he would accept any bet, and that's perfect. Good way to wrap it up, man.
And I'll wrap it up. I got a dollar coin, buddy.
Well, the Bills. Good way to wrap up the Bills. I don't have any coins, so.
That's all right. I was just feeling a need that I had to get a dollar coin in here. So here's the thing. I feel a little sexist relegating a woman to the coin instead of a bill, but hey, that's the American way. Lots of popular choices, and if I stay true to my qualifications, the only eligible honoree is Barbara Enright.
Right.
But I also don't think it's cheating to use the Women's Poker Hall of Fame for this one. And I'm going to say it's hard to argue with Lynda Johnson.
Yeah.
He's often called the First Lady of Poker. Her accomplishments go beyond her play and include trailblazing in magazine publishing, poker cruises, TV commentating, and charity efforts. Truly a well-rounded poker ambassador. Perhaps even more so than any of the men on the paper.
Hmm. Very good, man. I didn't think about a coin. I just thought there's so many coins. You know what I mean? And then it's like I got to come up with another 10 people, and I felt kind of weird doing a dollar. So I didn't do any coins, but it was pretty.
Well,
cool.
The funny thing was, I thought I was going to have a lot of people I couldn't fit on this.
Yeah.
And I'm like, you know what? I'll just do some coins just so I can do a little honorable mention kind of thing. It turned out I didn't really. There wasn't really anybody left that I didn't think. Should have got on here.
Yeah.
Were the people that you felt that you left out?
No, I don't know. I mean, I love to put Ivy on a bill, you know, just because of who he is and what he's doing and what he will ultimately probably be. But I did want to try to do the dead theme thing where everyone's dead and they had some sort of historic presence. But I wanted to be funny, too. So I don't think I really left anybody out that I would have given a bill to other than Ivy. I think maybe Ivy probably could deserve a bill here just because of how remarkable and polarizing he is as a player and person. So, but no, I don't know. I thought about putting Jean-Robert Ballon on a $2 bill, and I didn't do that because I don't think he deserves to be on money. You know, I mean, he's done nothing. You know, I mean, except being Survivor. So, I mean, other than that, really, his accomplishments don't deserve it. So, I don't know. But it would be funny if we had known, you know, other countries' denominations, you know, like the Euro, you know, stuff like that, what would go on those. But pretty cool, though. I can't believe I just shouted that out one show, and then all of a sudden, boom, we have this great show dedicated to it. It's pretty cool.
And we'll definitely have to do something in the magazine somehow with this, because it's too rich not to.
Yeah, I've already got a little art lined up for it, so people will appreciate it, I think. We'll probably do it in our August issue.
This is Noah Brunson, and you're listening to Annie Up.
Okay, we're going back to one of our longtime listeners, Chris.
Who?
Dave, who goes by VB Dave.
Oh, yeah, VB Dave.
He plays volleyball. Hangs out in L.A., came to our L.A. meetup with Faso, and we got in that little now infamous hand where it was like a sixth bet, and we got Faso laid out pocket kings, and we both had some crap hands. In fact, same crap hand, I believe.
I would argue that it's not infamous, but hey, let's move on.
Hey, well, certainly not famous. All right, it's a live game from our live hand from a 2-5 no limit cash game at the bike.
Hey,
he's live at the bike.
Live at the bike.
He says he usually acts pretty quickly, but he really thought about this one on the turn, especially the river. Wants to get our input. Thinks it might be a good hand of the week. Well, hey, it's a hand of the week, so we'll people judge what's a good one. the situation, it's typical of L.A. poker rooms. The table's pretty active with many people limping and a good number of hands seeing five-plus players to the flop, like your typical 2-4 here in Florida. the villain in this case is a 60-plus-year-old affable gentleman. That might be the first time we had affable in the hand of the week.
That's the first time I've ever had on the show, I think.
All right, 60-plus-year-old affable gentleman who had been playing pretty straightforward, but no reason to think that he is tricky. Effective stacks are 625.
All right.
All right. The hand is straddled under the gun to 10 bucks. Oh, boy.
Yeah, gotta love that.
So we start with 17 bucks in the pot. Our hero is in the cutoff. There are two limpers to him, and he looks down at queen, queen.
Hmm. Well, normally when there's a straddler and then callers, they don't have good hands. If they had really good hands, they would have raised the straddler, or unless they knew the straddler was gonna raise. So I'm gonna have to pop this a pretty decent amount. And it seems to me that in the 2-5 games that I play in, normal raises are between 25 and 30. So I don't know. I'm probably gonna make it like 60 to go here.
Okay.
Because you know, if I'm going to make it 25 or 35, which is like I just played a little while ago at Daytona, every raise was $25 preflop, and now you have a $10 straddler and two callers. You know, that was just a 2-5. So you know, now you got 2-5-10 and 10-10 already out there. You've already got basically $40 out there. You know, I would make it like 60, 65 to go. I think that's about right.
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, you're right. I don't want a lot of. I don't want a lot of callers for this hand. In fact, actually, I'd rather just have one.
Yeah.
You know, we don't know really the history of the straddle in this particular game. You know, some places the straddler does it because he likes to raise every single hand without even looking.
Right.
Sometimes they just do it because they saw some other person do it and thought it'd be cute, and they always end up checking, which drives me crazy.
Yeah.
You're going to straddle, you know, complete the whole Deutsche Bank-ness and raise with it. So that probably changes a little bit. We don't know that information, but yeah, I definitely want to. I mean, we've got, you know, if you think about it, your normal raise here would be the minimum would be 15, right? And you're right. I think it's usually a bit higher,
right?
And then we got a couple limpers in, so you got to equate for that. So I'm fine going 60 with this.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it might not even be enough. I mean, somebody's already committed 10, and there's other guys who may commit. Now they're getting the right out. You know. So 60 might not even be enough, but that's probably what I would lean toward. If I'm going to play these queens, I'm going to play them for like 10% of my stack here, I think, and put a raise in.
You know, unless it's a crazy, if it's a crazy limping, which it sounds like it is, I mean, sometimes you set mine with it because you don't want to get too committed to queens and, you know, an ace or a king comes on the board and then you don't know what to do. But that's a little too passive, I think. We got a couple of limpers here. There's enough money in there that maybe we can, thin the field here and not worry about a bunch of limpers. All right, well, our hero makes a 50 to go.
Hmm.
Pretty close, but you were thinking 60 might not be big enough, so I'm assuming that you think 50 is probably too small.
Yeah, I think it's probably too small.
All right, well, the small blind and both limpers all call, so there's 215 in the pot.
Yeah, see, there you go. That's the last thing you wanted was a small blind and the limpers now who've called 10 to now recall 40 more, you know, and that the second limper has to call after all those calls. So,
yeah,
you know, that's just not enough. I think it needed to be more. Even 60 probably would have been wrong too, 65. Huh.
Interestingly enough, the straddler folded.
Folds, yeah, that's hilarious.
Chicken. Bok, 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 bok. All right, so it's 250 in the pot. We're going to the flop. Flop is King, King, Trey, no suits. And the small blind leads out for $50. Both limpers fold. Though one of them thought for a while.
Huh. Oh. Well, if you have a king, you might bet out because you believe the guy who raised us, in this case, has a big hand. And you, if you want to know if he has ace-king or not, you might bet out at your own pot size so that, you know, bet size, I mean, so that you can control the pot. So it's very interesting that the guy leads out into a multi-hand. You know, I mean, there's a lot of players in this hand. So, geez. I don't know. I might just call here, try to control the size of the pot, and see what happens on the turn. I don't think that... I don't think raising is really the way to go here. You're going to commit another, what, 150, 200 to this, to queens, when you can easily have ace-king or king-queen or...
Yeah,
you know, even something really big like aces or something. So tricking us, maybe even pocket threes. I mean, I don't think he called a $50 raise with a three in his hand. So,
yeah,
he had to have hit this or have his own pair. Maybe he has jacks. But I don't think I'm raising here. I think I'm just going to call and see what happens.
Well, what I find interesting about this flop is because there's no suits, is that why would the small blind bet out and why would we raise if either one of us had a king? You know, if you're a small blind and you had a king, why would you bet out?
Right.
And if we had a king, why would we raise here? Because the board is not coordinated. Doesn't make sense to me on either one. I mean, unless you're thinking, you know, if you got a king, hey, maybe he's thinking that I don't think I have a king, so I'm going to bet, and then maybe he'll raise, and then I can get more out of him. But this is always a tough spot when the small blind lets out here because... You know, you got to think, hey, does he really have a king? Does he have pocket threes? Or is he just trying to push me off my hand? So I think you're right. I think a call here is in order. But I also think we got to think about what we're going to do on the turn before we get there. Don't you?
Well, yeah.
And we're controlling the pot here. So what happens if he fires 200 out and there's no queen on the next one? Or 500? Or I don't know how much he has left. Take the stacks for 625, right? So, you know, I don't know. I think just to say call and control the pot, I mean, we have very thin outs to improve here. So at some point, we got to figure out whether we're already ahead or not. And I don't know how you do that. I agree I don't want to raise here, but I got to have something going on in my mind before that turn card hits.
Well, the thing is one, I disagree that there's no reason to bet out. It's a small blind here. You have a multi-way pot. You could have a hand like Jackson. You want to know if they're good, and 50 is a nice little bet that doesn't cost you too much, but effectively will get people to fold if they don't have. They'll be afraid of the king, so he'll get information from his bet, I think. I don't know what he has, so you can't say he knows you have a king or not, because he could have the king. So I think that there is a reason to bet, and I think the reason to call is only because, you know, you raise to 150, and then he comes over the top, then you let it go for 150, but really, your call could tell him you have a king. If he doesn't have one, he may check the turn now. So I don't know what's going to happen on the turn, but I don't like to risk more money here when I don't have to, when I can let it play out later. And I wonder if some of your thinking always goes back to your limit roots, where you're thinking you can get a bigger bet on the turn and nothing. You know, I mean, I if I have a king, and I believe this guy has queens or aces, you know, our hero, I'm betting because I think he can't lay his hand down right now. And, you know, it's kind of like the old adage where if you flop a set, you bet into the preflop raiser because you think that they're going to have you're supposed to have a big hand there. So by us.
Yeah, I guess
raising,
my point is for the hero here by calling, I think it leaves a lot of doubt in the villain's mind. You know, is he calling because he has a king and he doesn't want to get too frisky with me, or is he just calling because he doesn't believe me? So by us calling, we don't give him any information, which I think is why it's so powerful there.
Well, the other thing, too, is that. You know, you're almost saying as if you know what the villain has, though. I mean, if he has a king,
no, not,
he's not
I'm
worried
saying,
about that.
If I'm the villain, by calling, we're not giving him any information here because of how the board is.
Right.
There's no reason to protect king, my king hand if I have here, so I could legitimately call and try to get more money later. Or I could just not be believing him and saying, you know what, hey, I'll buy the $50. I mean, it's an effective way of not giving him any information. I'm not necessarily saying it's the most optimal play to go, but at least it leaves our villain not really getting anything out of us.
Well, the villain knows it's on a draw by the call. That's one thing that he knows, at least. You know, I mean, he knows there's clearly
no draw.
What
draw is
there?
There's no suits and there's no...
Exactly. That's what I'm saying. What I'm trying to say to you is that by us calling, he knows, okay, it's not obviously a draw, so he must have something, is what he's telling you. He's not going to steal it from me on a turn unless I check. So now you know that there's no check coming.
Is either a king or something else that he thinks is good enough for showdown.
Right.
And we don't know which of that is.
Of course, we don't know what the villain has. So the villain might not be thinking that because he may have the king, so he wouldn't have to worry. You know what I mean? It's like you can't really play both sides of the hand. You have to play your hand only, really, when you're doing this, because if you're thinking like the villain, you don't know what the villain has. You know what I mean?
But I am playing it from our point of view. You're probably just getting confused what I'm saying. What I'm saying is we're not giving the villain any information by calling.
Right.
So I think it's a very powerful play here where if we raise, then we're giving him some more information. We're opening it up to more betting, where we're risk. I think the call right now, not only do we keep the pot a little bit small, but we don't help him out. If he doesn't have a king, this is where it's more effective. If he has a king, he doesn't really care.
That gets back to my point. So if he raises, right, if we raise,
right.
I don't know if we're telling him something either. You know what I mean? To be honest, I mean, we could say we don't believe that you have a king. It could be telling him that I have a king. Either way, it still doesn't tell him anything definitively. So I like the call for that reason, too.
Right.
You know, I like keeping the pot small here. I don't want to risk my whole stack on queens on a paired board, so I like the call for that reason, too.
Okay. All right, so our hero calls as 315 behind. As soon as he got the action to him, he said he's been c-betting pretty frequently, and I really didn't think that our villain here would lead with a king. I also thought a flat call looked stronger here than raising since I had position and I could reevaluate on turn.
Yeah, I mean, I do see a reason for betting with a king in my hand, because our hero is supposed to have a hand here, and if he has a hand like aces, queens, jacks, or whatever, then it's going to be difficult for him to get away from that, because he has to firmly believe our player has a king or pocket threes, and if he had pocket threes, then I don't think he would bet. So if he has a king, you know, that's the only way that you would fold. And it's hard for you to fold when you see two on the board. It's less likely that he's flopped a king. So, he has a king, I mean. So, you know, I believe that there's a reason to bet out if you do have the king, because it's less likely you have one. And if you have a big hand, you're not going anywhere. So that's the only thing I would disagree with on that. Other than that, I agree with the flat, and that it does look stronger that he's in position. So I just wouldn't disagree. I would disagree that there's no reason to bet. I've said it a couple of times here, but I really think there is. I would definitely bet if I thought somebody had a really big hand behind me.
Yeah, well, and the other thing we haven't talked about, too, is that this guy called preflop from the worst position at the table, a $50 bet, when we still had a straddler and a couple limpers behind to act after us. So that says something to me, right?
Yep, very good. That could be a big
hand. So I started thinking, you know, maybe he's got a weak king and he's worried we have ace king, but I don't think a weak king can call in that spot.
No, absolutely. I mean, maybe king queen, but I doubt it. I only a rookie would play king queen out of position against a raiser and other people still have to act. So, you know, if this guy is pretty strong, then he must have a pretty good hand here, like ace king or aces or something like that. So,
yeah, and I know it's probably too early to narrow down too much, but based on the information we have here, I'm going to have trouble believing that our opponent has anything other than ace king or a pocket pair.
Yeah. Yep.
Which
it's
doesn't
tough.
Really help us too much. If he has ace-king, then we're sunk. But if he has a pocket pair, we've got them all beat except for one of them. Or
plus,
two, I guess, if he kicks.
Yeah. And plus, if our information is correct from the, you know, we said he was, you know, a straightforward player, affable. You know, if you don't think he's tricky, then really it's got to be one of two types of hands, you know, ace-king or a pair. So, now it's whether or not his pair is smaller than yours or if it's ace-king. So it's tough. So let's see what happens on the turn.
All right, the turn is another king. So our board now is king-king, three-king.
Oof.
Obviously, suits don't help.
Yeah.
And small blind leads for 50 again.
Well, the thing about the king, though, is it really doesn't change anything. I mean, if he had a king in his hand, this doesn't really make it even more or less likely because you already have three of them. You know what I mean? Right. Either he has you crushed or he has quads. One way or the other, you're crushed anyway. So it really doesn't change much, does it?
No, I mean, it does make it a little less likely he has one because now we have another one exposed. But, you know, I don't want to get caught up on that. You're right. I mean, people get quads all the time, so yeah. It happens. But it doesn't change the fact that it, other than maybe it makes me feel a little bit better that my queens could be who I am. But if he has aces, it doesn't matter either.
Yeah.
You know, we're still drawing to two outs. So, yeah. I mean, we really don't... You're right. I don't think it really helps too much at all, other than, you know, it's less likely if he was playing tens or jacks, which are a legitimate hand, that he just boated up and caught up to us. I mean...
Just one quick thing. When you said... If he has aces, we're drawing a two outs. There are no outs, so we're drawing dead now if he has aces.
You're right. I'm sorry.
Because
yeah,
you only
right.
have three queens. Okay. And so, but yep. yeah, yep. so really we're pretty much screwed on his hand if we don't believe him. If we think he has jacks or smaller as his pairs, we're golden. Other than that, you know, we're screwed. So, but did you say he bet already?
Yeah, he bet 50, which I think at this point, I mean,
I know,
maybe he's milking me
bucks,
and that's
though.
Fine, but you know, I'll call it here, and then if he makes a big bet, then that's going to be tougher on the river. But right now, I'm happy to pay him off $50 here or $50 on the river to find out.
I can't fold 50.
He's got
there.
King's races.
Yeah, got to call
All right, so our hero says now, obviously, 5-5, if that's what he had. I think he meant 3-3 or 5 on the board.
Yeah.
If that's what he had, is out of the hands that beat us. It also made it more unlikely he has a king, so ace-king is less probable. Ace-ace is still out there, but I don't see him flat calling from the blinds, having three people with money in the pot left to act, I think for a bit and finally call. I'm not sure I'm ready to dismiss ace-ace there.
Yeah, because even you said it earlier that knowing that he had people behind him and he flat called out of position means he could have a really big hand, and he could be waiting for the straddler to go crazy. You know what I mean?
You know,
who knows?
Yeah, somebody else has already made the raise here. I don't feel like... I feel the need with aces to raise and not limp with them. But I don't feel a need to re-raise always with them.
Yeah.
If somebody's made a significant bet, and we kind of disagree whether the 50 was significant pre-flop, but it's a healthy raise.
Right.
So I don't necessarily feel like I need a raise there again with ace. I'm almost more inclined to call with my aces and disguise them a little bit, knowing that somebody else has already thinned the field. And you're right, we got the straddle left that might re-raise again, and then this is great. I got everybody doing my work for me. So I'm still pretty worried about ace-ace. I mean, I'm not completely worried about it, but I'm not going to dismiss it at all.
Yeah, I felt like you drove the point home earlier about the whole flat calling out of position with him. You know, if it could be possible, because you just, you know, it's that strong of a hand that it's the one hand he could try to attempt that with. And again, like you said, the other guys are still left behind to act. And yeah, I mean, I'm not dismissing ace-ace here, and even ace-king. I mean, ace-king. He can play ace king the same way, just because it's quads. I mean, you know, people hit the $100 high hand at the Mirage all the time. So I mean, I want to know why this guy can't have ace king here. I think he can.
I would absolutely play ace king like this pre-flop, and probably 50-50. I'd play it on the flop.
Yeah, we might not bet out like you said, but if you really convince the guy had aces, you might bet the king. So, you know,
and I certainly probably would. I mean, as ridiculous as it sounds, a $50 bet on the turn here. I mean, I got to think, if you're sitting there with quads, at that point, I don't think you're thinking about stacks here. I think you're just trying to get whatever you can out of it, thinking that the deck's crippled, which normally it is.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
I mean, I'm willing to put the 50 out there and hope that he does exactly what we're saying. Hey, it's only 50. All right, I'll call. You know, that's the best way to get money out of this hand, I think, if I had quads there. Right?
I mean, a check could be brilliant there if you believe that he believes that you were just trying to take a stab and that you were giving up control of the pot on the turn. It could be brilliant there, or, you know, but at the other way, too, is that when you have quads, no one ever puts you on quads like our hero's doing here. He's not putting him on quads.
Yep.
So you could bet it and effectively think that you're still good with your queens. So both ways, I think, is very smart. It's just whether or not your opponent, you got to really be in tune with the opponent and what he's thinking. So both ways, I think, work. I think both plays work. And I think it's tough. I can't not put him on one of these hands. It could be both ace-ace or ace-king still in my mind. Could be jack-jack, but I don't know. He's a pretty straightforward player, they said. So I don't know. It could be jack-jack.
And I might even give him 10-10. So it's almost 50-50 whether we're ahead here. Probably less than that.
Yeah.
Which is a little discouraging. All right, well, hero calls, and the river is a 6. And so our final board is king, tray, king, 6.
Mm-hmm.
And the small blind slides out $200. There's 615 in the pot now.
Yeah. Oh, 200 to win 600. 3-1 on our money. Well, I think it's a gut check. I don't know. I feel like it's a gut check time. You have to really... What else could this guy have? Would he really bet 200 on jacks, knowing that he's just not afraid of anything here? You know, how could he bluff three times with jack? Not bluff, but essentially it's a bluff catcher with jacks. I mean, what else could he have? Unless it's ace-king, or even ace-ace is tough here, because he's got the best full house, but he could be up against quads by the way we're playing it. You know, we're just calling along. So to keep betting, and now to bet 200, he is not afraid of you having quads, which means that you're beat. I'm going to lay it down.
Yeah.
You can't bet 200, right? You can't bet 200 thinking quads is out there, can you?
Yeah. I almost think you bet too much here, unless he really was bluffing, which I think is a stretch at this point. I mean, if we think that he had quads on the small on the turn, which is why you bet out the 50 to try to, you know, just try to get anything out of us we could, and then we called... Then he's like, oh, hey, this guy might give me a little bit more. 200 might be a little too much there. I might have gotten 100 if that's the case. But
yeah. Yeah, because effectively the pot was, what, 400? So you bet a quarter of the pot.
Yeah.
It's kind of fishy. Maybe 150 or something, but maybe 130. I don't know. I just feel like that amount of money he put out there, I don't think he could fold now if we came over the top. So for him to not be able to fold and tell you he can't fold...
Yeah,
I would think he has to have a king or aces, and we have to be beat. It doesn't even matter if he has a king or aces. Either or beats us, and we have to think that we're beat no matter what the hand is. So there's no reason to narrow it down and be results-oriented. Just know you're beat and get out, I think, here. I think you really do have to fold.
All right, well, Hero thought for a couple minutes, which he says is forever for him. He talks to the villain a little bit. Villain didn't respond. Our hero just didn't like the spot and folded.
Oh, he folded. Wow, usually he's end badly, and we call and lose. At least he folded, and hopefully he doesn't show us a bluff here.
And he says, here's the opportunity for Chris to say how badly I played.
No, I think that's a good fold, don't you? I mean, well, I don't know what the hand is yet, but I think it's a good fold.
I think all the available information showed us that we were beat, and the only hand that we had left that we could beat that was legitimate here was Jack-Jack. And yeah. It just didn't make sense, so, you know.
I can't bet 200 on the river with Jack-Jack. Especially
when we messed around with that $50 bet on the turn, but that doesn't mean we have to commit 200 more on the river.
Yeah, I mean, and like we said before, there are no draws, so our calling can't, you know, he can't be saying, okay, he was calling all the way. No, he knows we have a hand. He knows that we aren't drawing, so he has to be beating us by betting 200 on the river, unless he's an absolute genius and knows that we're going to fold. But, you know, our earlier recognizance said that the guy was an affable gentleman who was playing pretty straightforward. To me, pretty straightforward is ace-king or ace-ace here. So I have to agree with that fold no matter what you tell me, what he had for a hand.
All right, well, after our fold, after we folded, the villain tabled ace-ace.
Yeah. All right, well, that's good. We got it down, though. We got one of the hands. That's pretty good. I always like it when we think the hand.
Yeah. It actually shows that, you know, blind squirrel. That nut. But our hero told the villain that he didn't think he'd flat call with ace-ace with straddle and two limpers behind. He told me he wanted more people in the pot, so it was bigger.
Oh.
I guess that's fifth-level thinking I'm not capable of.
No, I don't like hearing that. That's old school, don't know what they're doing thinking. I don't like that at all.
Yeah, well, here's the thing, though. I think I laid out, now granted, I suck at crappy little bit hold'em, particularly at the 2-5 level, but I think I laid out a compelling argument for why ace-ace was possible there.
Yeah. What I don't like is that he wants more people in the pot. I would have called there knowing
that. Yeah, but he could
be
saying anything. But no, he's probably right. It's probably why he did it, which is, you know, terrible.
Yeah, that's terrible. But,
but I also think our hero needs to back up and say, you know, hey, understand that by him raising... Our hero raising, it kind of helped the ace-ace guy be a little tricky.
Yeah.
Now, had our hero just limped, then it would be terrible if the small blind just limped along as well, too.
Yes.
I think.
Unless,
but since we already raised it big,
the only thing that would save the justification for a limp is if, you know, after we limped, is if we knew that the straddler was a crazy guy.
Right.
But other than that, yeah, absolutely. I mean, to just say you want more people in the pot, that's crazy. You know, that's crazy. So, but no, I don't think he played the hand that badly. If anything, I think he played it the way we would have played it, really. He did everything pretty much the same way we did on every street. The only thing is that pre-flop, I may have raised more just because of the two limpers and the straddler, all that dead money. And I don't want people calling because it's cheap, you know.
Yep.
Other than that, I thought he played it all right.
All right, Dave, you know the drill. You've already got some swag. But everybody else, send us your hands of the week to podcast@andyamagazine.com, and we'll send you something great, like a T-shirt from PMS Pokerware, which sells hilarious shirts for gals and guys in the Andy Up store at andyupstore.com. And maybe we can get them to put a $100 bill with our silhouette on it.
Looking forward to the meetup in a couple of days in AC. Hope you guys come out and take my money. So I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
We'll see you at the tables.
Annie Up is a production of AnnieUpMagazine.com and is recorded at WDAE 620 AM in Tampa. Contact us at podcast@AnnieUpMagazine.com or call our hotline at 813-448-1120. If you'd like to advertise, send us an email at advertising@AnnieUpMagazine.com or call 727-331-4335. Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network.